Okay, so Simon, now that we're back for part two, I just want to apologize to the audience that we've had quite a few technical difficulties today. And this is the second segment of the Simon Parks interview that will be airing on April 28th, Tuesday from 3 to 4:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So I just want to welcome again Simon, who's also been having some major challenges in the technology arena. Hi, Simon.
Hi, lovely to see you, and
You
it's
too.
great again to be with your audience.
Yeah. You're such a kind soul. I think people feel that about you. So we have a ton of questions. Now these questions are from Alice, and she says, I understand that the Earth and humanity has been increasing the feeling of the effects of the cosmic light rays of the approaching photon belt since 1962. However, I understand that actually entering the belt will not be gradual, but will be like hitting an invisible fence that will cause a tremendous electrical jolt to all of humanity that will have varying effects according to each individual's light quotient. I understand that this will be the so-called event that has been described for years on the internet. According to Earth's indigenous elders, the Earth is due to enter this belt in the first half of the second decade of the century. This is a pretty long question. So her question is, one, if this timing matches what your fourth dimensional contacts have, do you agree? Like, she's asking, does this match what your fourth dimensional contacts have told you?
Yes, but not on the timing, not the I don't agree with the time this is meant to happen, but the process, yes, I agree with that.
Okay. She says, what have they said will happen to the Earth and her people when this actually occurs?
Well, I think basically she's got the answer there. It's the event, it's the final upload or trigger that gives, she uses the word jolt, which is quite interesting. It's the final push, that's maybe a better word, that will, for those people who can make the change, and let me just reiterate, it's not for everybody, but those that can make the change or choose to make the change, who have reached a certain position of their own consciousness, their own bodies, their own energy, DNA, then that is the element that will take them into that from which there's no return. But for those who are scared and fearful, then they will receive that jolt, but it won't push them over to the edge. So they will just remain in their same position. So I agree with her, but I don't agree on the timing.
So when you say fear, is that the number one distinction as to whether you make the jump or not, is fear?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I suppose ultimately, yes, because fear. We can trace back fear of accepting something that is not part of the agreed understanding, fear in putting yourself out there, fear in embracing something that is different. And so, yes, I suppose many people are fearful of standing out and being unusual and being different and having a point of view and having a principle. Most
Interesting.
people like to be part of the group. And, if you are in living in fear, then how can you possibly develop and flower and grow because you are always looking over your shoulder?
Good point. Good point. Now, what about for those that are a bit stifled in their evolvement, meaning, let's say they're caught up in not a really good behavioral cycle. Let's say that they're beating their girlfriend or they're heavily into drugs. You know, how does that fit in? Because I get that email every once in a while myself.
Well, I think the key there you word was heavily into drugs. I think that people who use drugs lightly, I don't think there's a problem at all. But that's my own personal opinion. Beating your girlfriend is not acceptable. And how can you possibly be a spiritual person and undertake that? So there's a difference between being psychically aware and being spiritually aware. You could be quite psychically aware but still be violent. But if you're spiritually aware, you shouldn't be violent because you should respect everybody. So if somebody is domestically abusing somebody, we would really, would the Mother Earth want that person to come through the front door? I don't think they would.
Interesting. Do you also feel, you've mentioned before in the very beginning that not everyone's going to so-called make this cut, and so much of the propaganda out on the internet says that same thing, that everybody's going to make the cut, there's only going to be maybe 5% that don't.
No, that's BS.
Yeah, and don't you think also that part of that is just the soul itself is not ready for this cut? This is something that happens every so many cyclical periods, right?
I think the problem is that with religion, most religions, not all, but most religions want to gain as many converts to their cause as is possible. And if you say everybody is welcome, then you're more likely to get more to your religion than someone else's. Now, the Jehovah's Witness religion is different because it's 144,000 people that will be saved in their religion. That's not a very good way to advertise, because if you've got 1 million people signed up, which is 144,000 are going to make it. So most religions cottoned on to the fact that you need to save everybody, and everybody's going to have a chair and everyone will have a glass of wine. But that isn't the way it is. You know, when your family sits around and you have a traditional games, probably Scrabble, Monopoly, Cluedo, whatever the games that people play these days that I can still remember playing as a kid. You know what? Only one person won it. Lots of people didn't win it. That's about life, is that we strive, we learn, we try to change, and we do the very best we can. I would love everyone to go through it, but you've only got to walk around your major cities and streets, and you know that most people are not going to make it as it stands. What I think will happen is there will be some very physical changes in the next 2 years, which will force many people to reevaluate how they live, how they think, and who they really are. And from that, I think there'll be quite a sizable proportion of people who will change their views and their ways. And I can see a huge split between them and the belief in the system. And I mean the government system, mm-hmm. how they elect people. And when that break with the leading group comes about, we may well have a sizable portion of people who are ready for that change, but I don't believe everyone is ready, nor do I think everybody wants to make that change.
Or are they ready to make the change, you know? I was going to ask you, do you actually agree that there is this source or higher power that is disappointed that the cut was so low? Because you read that a lot within...
No, I don't. I agree, you're right. You read it a lot.
Yes.
No, I don't agree with that. I think that that's why the minimum bar was set. There was a standard set that if we as a race hadn't made that, then Source could quite legitimately say it's not worth the energy, the effort's not been worth it. Very, very fortunately, that minimum bar was reached. And it's a little bit like democracy in your country and in my country, which means that if you have an election, the person who has one vote more than another wins. So you set, in that system, you set the bar as one vote. In the worldwide game, if you want, the bar was set incredibly low. There are billions of people on this planet, but only millions were required to be at that point. So it was a very low bar, and it was actually succeeded and exceeded. So I think humans who are in the know, humans are very spiritual, they're the ones that are disappointed. I don't think Source is disappointed. Source will get what it wanted because it set the bar. I think it's people projecting their own feelings on it and looking round, and, you know, 75% of the population is not awake. 25% is, as it stands now. So from a human perspective, you could say, I'm terribly disappointed. Source, God is terribly disappointed. Listen, how do they know what God's thinking?
Exactly.
How do they know what Source is thinking? What I can tell you is that Source set a limit. That limit was exceeded. Therefore, as far as Source is concerned, the human race or proportion of it has proved that it is capable and worthy. So that's where we are.
Wow, that's very succinct. Thank you for that. Let me see. Her other question is, will this cause the long-predicted pole shift?
No.
Okay. What part will the Galactic Federation of Light play when the Earth hits the photon belt?
Well, you see, I don't subscribe to one federation, one council. It's quite popular. There are two or three people on the internet who talk about the Federation as if it was something from Star Trek. I'm waiting for William Shatner to make an appearance as a member of the Federation. There is, first of all, a very tight-knit group that are in a council. So let's call them the Federation, and I'm quite happy with that. But there is a much looser association of groups that come in from time to time to aid the good cause. But they don't, they're like mercenaries, they don't fight all the time or offer their help all the time. They are specialists in certain fields. And as specialists, they bring their services for free, actually, for certain jobs. So let's say, for instance, you have a very difficult underground base which is under a population center. You cannot just hit it with sound waves and implode it. You have to have a very special way of dealing with that. So you would get a specialist group in to do that. We have a group of off-world entities who decided that they wanted to work together to defeat the negatives, because no single good group is capable of doing it in this quadrant, this part of our multiverse. The only way they could do it was by joining forces, and that's why we had this group, this council. But I'm unwilling to use the word Galactic Federation of Light, because there are beings from the fourth dimension who are not beings of light, who are absolutely behind the good causes. And if we're not careful, I'm sorry I'm labouring the point here, but if we're not careful, we're giving the impression, not you and I, but some people are giving the impression that only these translucent body beings, glowing white light, are bringing good. That's not the case, because there are people who have been bad in the past on the planet Earth who, we all know some of them, have changed and they've done for good. So we shouldn't judge people by what they look like. We should judge people by their actions. So it's very important that we don't just think that anybody in the light is good and anybody who isn't. It's their actions. Judge people by their actions.
And also on top of that, Simon, it's a little bit tricky, because at this time, don't you find that there are some what I would call double agents?
Yes.
That have been sent in, you know, yes. So their actions are not really spectacularly of the light, and yet they have an end game that is feeding the light agenda.
Yes. Some of them are paid agents, and they're the worst kind. Others are actually mind controlled, and they are the most difficult, because they passionately believe in what they're saying. And they passionately believe they're right, because to them that's a real memory or that's a real happening. And unfortunately, those people are fooled, just like many others. And how we'll know it is towards the end game, when people say, look at all these spaceships coming out of the Kuiper Belt, or wherever that might be. Quick, get on board, everybody. They're going to save us. And anyone who says that you should get on the spaceship and leave the planet Earth, they have a bad agenda, because this is the home of the humans.
Absolutely.
And why would you want to leave this home? Stay here and fight to clean it up. Stay here and fight to look after it. And it's your home. You've been here so long now as a human race. It is yours by right. The planet has accepted you as part of its life force. Otherwise, it would have wiped out humanity a long time ago with pole shifts or ice ages. So basically, don't leave, stay, and make it good.
God, I say that all the time. Okay, and then the other part is, what will the fate of the Mantids be?
What a nice question. I hope that fate of the Mantids is good, because if the fate of the Mantids is good, then it's inextricably tied to the human race. If the human race can pull itself up, then the mantids will then share in that. The group that won't share in that, as it stands at the moment, are the reptilians and the archons and a number of other very negative forces who... Chris Thomas is a very interesting guy. I've got a lot of time for Chris Thomas. He talks about, I can't remember exactly, but it's like self-ascension. It's trying to get the leg up without working for it. And that's a very, very valid point. The point is, I think, bottom line, is that the source or Earth won't allow something to ascend through the next phase unless it has shown and proved itself worthy. Now, we have to be careful we don't go down into religious dogma here when we start saying, oh, prove yourself or show yourself to be pure. But I think what we can say is that if you're driven by greed, jealousy, anger, hate, then you're not ready to ascend. But if you are of the opinion that love should be the cornerstone of your value-based system, then you are ready to ascend. So I'm hoping that the human race will ascend, and one group of the mantids anyway, because remember, just as there are many different sorts of humans, there are many different sorts of mantis or mantids, and I can only ever speak with or for the group that I interact with. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I have any knowledge or say over any other group that I've never seen. So the group that has been positively working for the assistance of mankind, I'm using the word generically there, hopefully will do well. But anybody who's fought against humans gaining independence, well, they need to be kicked off the boat, actually.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you anymore. Now, question, you going back to one of the statements you made, you were talking about there are quite a few different groups or factions that come forth at this time to assist, and some of them can be mercenary type, I think is what you said. Does that relay to the Guardian Alliance?
Yes, in a way it does, because it's much more looser. The word alliance, exactly what it says, it's an alliance. When you talk about federation, in the true sense of the word, a federation is a group with very tightly fixing rules and how they work together. But an alliance is a group of people with different and divergent aims or goals, but who've all signed up because there's all one enemy they don't like. So in other words, they may have no interest in the planet Earth at all, but they have an interest in preventing this planet falling to the dark forces, because then they know in the future it will be used for an attack somewhere else. So an alliance is literally a grouping of very divergent creatures who have one common goal, and that is to prevent a takeover of planet Earth.
That was great for you to really clarify that, because I think that's like a huge question amongst many people. How about the Ashtar Command? Does it really exist? And if so, is it part of the dark agenda?
I have concerns. I'm always very, very worried about people who don't show themselves. Because if you have nothing to fear, if you are honest and open, then you should actually show yourself publicly. Now, there are those people that say, yes, but, you know, I will be killed if I come forward and tell the truth. Therefore, I will hide behind a mask, or I will do a video show and you won't see my face. And there are two things I say to that is, I'm not a religious person, but I do believe God existed. And Jesus Christ knew before he even came to earth that he was going to be killed. Now, he had the opportunity to hide. Did he? No, he didn't. Secondly, if you really are who you say you are, you will be protected. You will be looked after, and you should be confident enough to go out into the wider world and know that you won't be taken out. Right. If you don't have that confidence, then there's something not right there. And ultimately, people will only trust somebody who is prepared to put their cards on the table. This is who I am, this is what I stand for, and you judge me for that. So the problem I have with Ashtar Command is that a lot of these are voice distortions, and some of the messages do not strike me as truthful, honest, and loving. Some of them seem very robotic, very command and control, and you know, you will do this, or this is what you should do. When I talk to people, I never tell them what they should do. I just say, this is my message. You decide what you want to do. That's the way it is. Right. So I do have concerns about that, yes.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Okay, now Alice has one last question. It's regarding Nibiru. She says it's now clearly visible in the day and the nighttime skies. What is the connection between Nibiru's return to Earth at the exact time when we are about to enter the photon belt? And what is the agenda of the Anunnaki and the elite as Nibiru comes even closer to the Earth? Good question. Thank you.
She's done a research.
Good job.
And I did an interview with someone else a couple of days back on telephone, and I did talk about a foreign body that would be entering our solar system at some point. I can say that the key players in the Vatican are expecting the return of the landlord. So I absolutely convinced that they are expecting any moment for the return. Why is it timed for that belt? Just as the same reason that CERN, the Hadron Collider, was timed to activate on the 21st of December 2012, and as you know, didn't, because it's to disrupt. The whole object of the landlords coming back is to take possession, as they see it, of their property. Well, if their property is up and evolved, then they're not going to take possession of anything. So I guess they would want to return the day before to attempt to hold it all up.
Wow. So actually, following that gives you an idea of the timetable of the possible event.
And that's why I didn't agree with the first point of the timetable. It was too far ahead, too far in the future. It's much closer than people realize.
Good point.
That's why the Vatican has two observation posts. One's an infrared telescope and the other one's an electromagnetic telescope, and paid for by the Vatican, searching the skies for the return of Nibiru. That's the whole point of it, and to plot it and to make communications with it. So that's why, because you know, there is actually, someone told me there was actually a documentary or something on YouTube about it, which I would say is worth looking at. I haven't seen it, but my friend said it was good. Proper TV documentary, and anyone with any sense would say, why in goodness name is the Vatican, which is a church organization, why is it funding huge telescopes to peer into space? You know, and exactly. Why would a religious order be 24/7 staring into space? So, you know, the evidence is out there. People have just got to go and dig for it, really.
Well, and then, of course, they're latest, and what I mean by that is maybe within the last 5 years in particular, they've really picked up the pace of mentioning that they bless the extraterrestrials and that they accept the extraterrestrials. You know, this has been a big campaign of theirs in the last several years in particular. So
yes, I mean, the first Monsignor that the Vatican appointed as alien ambassador, people don't even realize that the Vatican has an alien ambassador. First one was a woman, and then she did, I think, a year in office, and then she was replaced by a guy. He did 2 years in office, or 3 years, and then he was replaced by another guy. So the Vatican has a Monsignor whose job title is alien ambassador. Now, what other people don't know is the United Nations also has an alien ambassador, but they don't advertise that for obvious reasons. The point is very simple. If I am the head of the biggest, say the Pope, the head of the biggest religious order in the Western world, you want to maintain your financial income. And if aliens landed and it was accepted, then the big question is, well, what is God? So what the church, as we understand it, has done is to position itself so that when disclosure comes, there's still a place for religion. I'm not talking a place for God. There is always a place for God. Mm-hmm. But these churches are not interested in God. They're interested in their money streams, the property they own, the stocks and bonds they hold, and the power that they wield. So they need to, from their perspective, need to ensure that they have a position in society, and a society that understands there's alien life may not want a religious order. So we are seeing some very clever footwork now by the major churches to position themselves to say, well, we told you there was aliens. Of course there's aliens. We knew that a long time ago. And I talk to them all the time, and they come and get Holy Communion with me every Sunday. So that's the line they're going to take.
No, but it's true. And I'm noticing it's in the Christian churches lately. Yeah. Big yes. time. There's a big push in the Christian churches.
Well, they know that it's coming. They know that the disclosure cannot be put off for much longer. And what they're frightened of is losing control of the story, of the argument. And their hope is that if they can push it out for a couple of years or so, then it won't be such a shock to people. If it happened now, many people would say, well, what is God? What is religion? Why have I not known this? How did God not know this? How did my churchmen not know this? And so therefore they begin to call into question the role of the church. And that's what the churchmen don't want. They don't want to be called into question and to be signed off as extinct like a dinosaur. So this is what we're seeing. I don't think it's going to work, because I think many people are going to say, well, how long have you known this for? Mm-hmm. and that will be the sinking of them, because they've known it for hundreds of years, if not yes. thousands of years.
Yes. And they've been so heavily involved. Now, this is from Deborah, and she says, I understand you have mantid DNA. Are there very many others on the planet like yourself who carry this sort of DNA? I've wondered if I am somehow related to this after having dreams where I felt as if a mantid had its arms wrapped around me. I've always been fascinated with insect praying mantis and have had some very interesting experiences with these insects. Do you have any comments on this? And do you think there's a connection?
Yeah. Right. We need to look at DNA in the energetic form, not necessarily in the physical form. Just like we have energy strands of DNA. If somebody is having dreams of mantid or mantis, I have to remember that the American people say the word mantis and the British say the word mantid. Okay. It's just worth pointing that out once in your show so that we're clear what we're talking about here.
Sure.
It is because you're connected. Now, that I was interested in, she said had his or her arms around her. That actually is something they do when they're trying to connect with family. The mantids learn from example. In other words, they study and watch humans, and they've often seen older brothers or sisters, when they're standing next to a younger brother or sister, put his or her arms around the child and pull the child against their legs. So they have merely copied that and replicated it, because what they're trying to do is to communicate non-verbally with humans. So what she's described leads me to believe that she would have either a mantis soul or a part mantis soul or mantis energy, because these creatures don't waste their time. In other words, they wouldn't just drop in and say, hello, nice to see you, we're off to do some shopping at the mart. They've come down there to say, you know who you are. You don't know who you are. We're going to show you who you are. This is how close we are. Now, wake up, start thinking, doing your research, connect with who you are, and we'll come back and visit you when you know you've worked it out. So, yes, I would totally agree with that. And if she wants to drop me a line on the website, I can put her in touch with somebody who is setting up a website just for people who have mantis souls.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Great idea. She also asked the question, I had an experience in an altered state where I actually saw a reptilian human watching me, and once he realized that I saw him, he disappeared. At the time I was scared, but later in meditation it seemed that he was actually being my protector. Most references to reptilians are very negative. What is your perspective on the reptilian humans as the protectors being positive?
Right, I need to be clear. When she's used it twice now, the word reptilian human, does she mean, do you think, we'll have to ask her, won't we, whether she means a human being with a reptilian soul, and there's plenty of those on the planet. Is she referring to a hybridized half-human, half-reptilian? So I'm not clear. I'll try and answer both. If she's referring to a human with a reptilian soul, then that is my lab. That is military. That's not so good. If she's referring to hybridized, and remember the Anunnaki were hybridized reptilian. I have a genuine photograph of an Anunnaki.
Really?
Yes, I'm very, very privileged to have been given that.
Can we see it?
I have actually been given permission by the taker of the photograph to use it.
Yeah.
So the answer is yes, you could see it.
Okay.
We have to be very, very careful. It's a very serious question because there's a lot of emotion involved in that question. Most people won't understand that, but I do. These creatures often sell themselves as I'm your protector, and a very strong bond grows up between the human female, it's always a female, and the reptilian type male. And it's sometimes a very difficult emotional shock to learn that this person isn't their protector but is their manipulator. I always use it because it's the most important one I have.
The
23-year-old girl whose father worked for the Rothschilds had such a creature, and she always looked on him as her protector, and she learned that it wasn't, and in the end she banished him, which you can do. So it is an emotional thing here, because if you have only known these creatures since you were 2 or 3 years old, they are closer to you than a brother or sister. So one has to tread very carefully. Yes, some are good. Some reptilians are good, and some actually renege on their own side, and to protect humans, they'll do that. So they get orders to hurt somebody and they'll just refuse. So they're chucked out from their own order, and they then assist that female. But of course, the problem there is that the negative side would send somebody anyway to that female. So in nine times out of 10, using the 10 system that humans so use. I use the 12 system because that's the figures we use, 3, 6, 9 and 12. But anyway, 9 out of 10 times this is not a protector. It is actually malevolent and should be asked to leave.
Wow, thank you for that clarification. That's great. Now, this is from Carolyn. She says, if I have always believed that Jesus and the other ascended masters were real people whose spiritual teachings were twisted by men to form the various religions in an effort to control the masses, lately I've been reading that the ascended masters are fictitious characters that were made up to support their doctrines. What are your comments on that? I can't wait to hear this.
I would suggest that she reads about the essences. This is a school, an esoteric school, who were on the edge of the Dead Sea, actually where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. In fact, they had a hand in writing the Dead Sea Scrolls. And that's actually where the real Jesus was educated. Mm. So through great teachings, Jesus was real as far as I'm concerned. There were a number of very real learned men. I don't like the word masters, actually.
Really?
I don't like it. Because to me it's, I'm better than you because I'm a master. Mm. I'm an ascended master. You're not ascended. I'm better than you. No. We're all equal. Some people are just further down the road of learning. So I don't like the word master because it's somebody setting themselves up as better than somebody else. And that's not truth. So I don't go down that road. And Jesus never called himself a master, actually. Other people gave him that label. So Jesus sold himself as a very humble person. That's why he didn't walk around the high street in expensive fine raiment. He was just dressed simply. So we need to be clear about that. I've seen too many people who call themselves ascended masters. Anyway, back to the point here. Yes, she's absolutely right in her question that the story was manipulated and changed to develop a line that supported religious teachings through the church. So the whole object was to how do we make this? We can't get rid of this story because it's too big, it's too embedded, and too many people have seen Jesus and the story. So we can't write it off as a lie. So what we'll do is we'll manipulate it so that we can take over where he left off. So in other words, Jesus isn't on the planet anymore, but the church is, and we've got all these men in beautiful gold and silver robes with lots of lanterns and incense. He's as close as you're going to get, so come here. So they did change the story, they did alter the story, they did manipulate it. There were a number of very good teachers around Jesus who then, after Jesus's physical body died, they went off into different places of the globe to teach the real story. And that is the truth. There obviously were people who were corrupted, people who changed sides, just as with all humans.
Especially at that time, I mean, it was the earmark for our future and what we're dealing with today. So,
well, just on the side of that, it's very interesting. People will smile at this, but I had a communication with an off-world entity just on the discussion of the Roman Empire. I mean, you know, things I talk about with these off-worlders are not all about guns and secret weapons and all the rest of it. It's stuff that interests me. And I was quite surprised that the response I got was that the creation of the Roman Empire came about simply to spread the teachings of Christ. In other words, that what the Roman Empire offered was that if you had a letter, and they had letters in Roman times, if you had a letter in Scotland, in the country that's just next to my country in England, you could get that letter from the farthest flung part of the empire, from Scotland, right across to Turkey. It might take you an age, but you could do it. In other words, travel was possible, messages were possible, teachings were possible, and the empire allowed that spread right across its borders. And it's very interesting that although Christ was supposed to be around the 32-33 AD mark, it wasn't until 350 AD to 400 AD that Christianity really embedded down. And hey-ho, within 10 years of the embedding of Christianity, the Roman Empire fell apart. In 410 AD, the major city of Rome was attacked and sacked by German tribes. So within 10 years of major churches opening everywhere throughout the whole of the Western world, the empire collapsed in large part. So my teachings are, yep, the empire was there to spread the word of Christ, because no other time in history had the major parts of the world been controlled by one city-state or one empire. Interesting, isn't it?
That's really interesting. Different perspective than what I've heard before.
Absolutely, yeah.
Very cool. She also asks, does the Hollow Earth and Agartha Network theory have any merit?
I hope so. Otherwise, I'm one third adrift.
That's right. You've been very upfront about that. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you regarding the Ascended Masters, don't you feel, though, that we get stuck on the language? You know, for example, you were talking about, yes, things have been manipulated and unfortunately tainted by the agendas at hand. But, for example, I'll just pick, pick somebody, Sanat Kamara.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I seriously doubt that he walked around and said, I'm an ascended master.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure he maybe mastered his ascension or maybe something along those lines. But it feels like we always get so hung up on words.
I have a problem with the word master, because the word master is male.
The word master is male?
Yes. In most Western societies, the word master is male. You have a school master.
Interesting.
You don't have a feminine master. You
like
have a mistress.
Like mistress?
Well, the word is, well, no. The word is mistress. It's master and mistress. So why are we using the word master all the time? Is because it's male-dominated. Something going wrong here. There are plenty of women who are ascended, who can do teachings. You know, what's my warnings here? It's like this religion coming again. It's male dominated. I don't believe in that. I don't think people should allow themselves to be given labels such as master and ascended. Why is somebody ascended? Well, because, you know, they've done this, that, and the other. Okay, where have you ascended to? No, you haven't ascended. What you've done is you've connected with the truth. You haven't ascended anywhere. You're still here, physical, in the 3D world. You still drive a motor car. You still drink tea. You still drink orange juice or whatever it is. You're not ascended. What you are is learned. You're no different from a village in native North America where the learned elders sat round and they held the truth and then they supported and gave advice. That's what they are. But we have a mechanized system now which tends to want to put people up on a pedestal. You know, the days are gone when you climbed a big mountain to see a holy man sitting on top of his mountain in a cave and lived very simply. I can have a lot of respect for that. So I do have a problem with that terminology. Yeah. There are lots of good people who don't call themselves that, but others do.
Yes.
But that's still the problem, because why do they feel they need to call them that? You see, the mantis that I deal with are in the fourth dimension. So that's another dimension above us. But they still haven't learned fully because they have a hierarchical formation of government. They have professions. They have a profession of doctors, a profession of computer operators and spaceship flyers. And then, hey-ho, they have the masters. That actually is their title, their job title. They're actually called Universal Master because every multiverse has a universe within it, and each universe is apportioned one mantis or manted master to look over that universe. So they take the title Universal Master. So they still haven't learned. They still need to evolve because they are into hierarchical command. When you go up to the fifth, sixth, and seventh dimension, you do not find a hierarchical, stratified society. What you find is those who are learned and those who are not. So they don't take labels to themselves. So the higher up you go, the more you realize that you're equal, but you specialize. So I might want to specialize in this subject or you want to specialize in that subject. That doesn't mean I'm a master. It means that I have chosen in my life to devote my life to this topic so that I can use that for the good of my people. That is a higher ascension. So in the third and fourth dimensions, we're still struggling. You know, think of the army. I'm a sergeant. I've got 3 stripes. I'm a captain. I've got, well, don't want to get this wrong in your country. I've got 3 bars. I think 3 bars for a captain. You know, this is it. It's all hierarchy. And so this is so primitive. It's so power and control ordered. You know, you're the janitor. You wear these clothes mm-hmm. and you stand there.
And you do this job.
I'm chief executive. Exactly. So, you know, there's so much baggage that we have to get through and learn. And people think they have to be this way and they don't.
Thank you for the clarification, because I think I had missed the ultimate point that you were referring to. Okay, now this one's really interesting. Now, we kind of dabbled in this the last part of our interview, okay. And it says, can you ask Simon about the soul traps? Is this horrible procedure stopped at any time by the Galactics? This is from Iwa.
No, they can't stop it. That's the problem. If they could have stopped it, they would have done so. And this is something that's very hard for people to understand. Again, we always want someone else to come. I'm not criticizing the questioner. The question is a damn good question, actually.
Yeah.
But generally, we're always looking for someone else to come and help us. Will the Galactics do this? Will the Federation of Light do that? No, you've got to do it. Because the only way the soul traps will come down is when human consciousness, that's ordinary men and women on this planet, evolve to a position where they say, do you know what? I'm not taking this anymore. I can see through your lies. I don't want this life anymore. This is not just, it's not fair, and it's not good. And when that human consciousness rises up, there'll be no place for the warders, I call them the jailers, the warders, there'll be no place for them or their soul traps, and they'll have to disappear and go off to some other planet. So it isn't that someone's going to come charging in with laser guns and have a big battle and we're all going to be happy and dance in the streets. I'm afraid humanity has got to work damn hard and raise its consciousness and just by the power of its own thought expel these people. And finally, and it's a hard one for people to swallow, is that there is a universal law, and remember, we are a universe within a multiverse. That's why I'm talking about our verse, not anyone else's verse. Within this verse, that we have allowed this, because we have allowed this to be built around us. Therefore, in some way, we have emotionally accepted it and bought into it. And so it is a crime for a law-abiding external force to come in and rid us of it, because actually we have emotional energy bought into it. It's very, very clever the way it works, for the enemy can use that. And the only way we can do it is when we say we reject it in its entirety. And when we as a people reject it, then an external force can come in and say, right, about time too, this lot don't want you, go away. But until that time, the enemy, and I'm using that word loosely, can claim, well, you know, 1% of the population are ruling 99% of the population. You know, they could throw us off any time they want, but they don't. So therefore, they must want us to rule them. And that's a very clever argument. And in a way, you think back to the days of flower power, when that movement nearly did topple an administration, nearly did change the world.
Yes.
But didn't quite.
Yes, very good point. Now, if someone were to contact you and say, God, Simon, I'm beside myself. I am under such horrible psychic attack. I can't sleep. They won't leave me alone. What would you say? What would you suggest that they do to stop that psychic attack?
Well, what they'd have to do is sign up on my website for a 30-minute consultation. And I would want to know, as much as they could tell me, what their experiences were, what they've seen, what they do, and I would then have to decide whether they were being attacked by a demonic entity, whether they're being attacked by a shadow being, whether they were being attacked by humans who were psychically attacking them, whether they were being attacked by scalar wave weapons or electromagnetic weapons. So I would have to go right through it to see what it was. And of course, there are some people that aren't attacked. They have a condition and they just believe they're being attacked. Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you that of every 12 people I see who come to me with that, 11 of them are genuine. The vast majority of people know damn well they're being got at by somebody.
Yeah.
And there's always a very good reason for it. Usually these people are light workers or they are healers and somebody doesn't like what they're doing. So I would say you need to book a consultation with me. Tell me everything you can, and then I will do what I can to assist you.
Very cool. Now, Iwa also said, I recently read an alternative media opinion that Manson's murder, Sharon Tate with the friends, was a false flag. It looks definitely like it was, but I heard that those people are still alive and participated in a fictional, faked murder plot. I'd appreciate your response about this, and remember this horrible event was a main factor in ending the hippie movement. What are your thoughts?
Yes, it is, because it just follows on nicely from
what we just talked about.
This is how the universe works.
I know. I love it.
Yes, and it loves you too. I think the important thing is that whenever you have a movement that's going to bring about change and you are at the top of the tree and you don't want that change, you either convert that movement to play your game or you kill those people at the top. Or you do something to discredit them with their followers. So many times, and that's the one that's been put forward, but many times the elite, and I say elite, not spiritually elite, but financially elite, the financially elite have used not very subtle ways, sometimes very, very open and brutal ways to prevent something from moving. And that's exactly what happened, because the flower power era was on track to totally destabilize an administration, but was deflected and changed so that people turned within themselves. Mm-hmm. And the way of being became more important than the message. In other words, to sit round in a group and smoke pot, as it was called then, became what you did, whereas prior to that, the messages had been, let's bring change, let's fight for freedom. And so the message was very subtly changed from let's all just sit around and get stoned, which is great because then the authorities basically aren't being challenged anymore. So yes, your questioner is absolutely right.
Okay, now this is from Cheryl. She says, can Simon ask his off-world contacts if the Earth is round or flat? Now, there's a lot of flat Earths and very interesting information, and I got to tell you, a lot of it's very convincing. And one of the questions that leads into that is apparently quite a few rockets have been launched. Many of them have either been exploded or they could not go past like the 80,000 mile cap or something, so on. I'm just curious, what do you think about that?
There are two things we need to sort out here. No, the Earth is not flat in the physical sense. This is quite a long answer, and I may not be able to explain it properly, but I'll do my best. The Earth is not flat physically. It is round because in the third dimension is very dense. Now, that is why when psychic people see orbs that appear, they are round. I'm not talking about the metal orbs. I'm talking about the little orbs of light that you can see through like bubbles, soap bubbles. The reason they're round, this is consciousness being projected from another dimension. Somebody is either spying on you or more likely wants to come and say hello. So they project their consciousness into your reality. But our consciousness in the third dimension is very heavy. And because of that, when this energy comes through, it's forced into a bubble, into a round shape. That's why planets in the third, in our universe are round, because of the energy, the way it is, forms things into circular. Right, so that's first thing. However, the questioner, is more on the target than he or she realizes, because I will accept that if you can think of your computer, your old fashioned hard drive computer, it has a disk in it, and that disk contains all the information, pictures, videos, everything. That's the hard drive. I do accept that every verse has a hard drive to it, which gives a holographic reality for the creatures that exist on there. In other words, I'm quite happy physically to know that the world is round, but the universe or the galaxy is actually disc-shaped. And that creates the environment for many different creatures, many different things to exist and to experience the reality as to them. That is why any spiritual people or psychic people who have been sitting together talking can suddenly sometimes be aware that there's just them and there's nothing else around them. And sometimes people in the background seem very indistinct. And it's just like everything just disappears around them as if it was a void. So a holographic reality in each verse for each multiverse, and so that we progress from one phase to the next on our learning journey. And this isn't created by aliens, it's created by Source. It's created by God. So, yes, that's my take on the flat Earth. Now, second part of the question, I don't think I can agree with the information that the person has received, because I am personally aware of alien craft that have left the Earth's gravity and have traveled a very long distance and come back again. It's more to do with what we call the quarantine, and there are various types of quarantine that have been around the Earth. Certain factions craft have been taken out and been destroyed. It was nothing to do with the flat Earth. It was to do with they didn't have authority to leave the Earth beyond a certain distance. And so one side is always trying it, trying to get out, push out the envelope, see how far they can get, and they get shot down, etc., etc. And there are many, many good whistleblower testimonies of rockets that have been taken out. But, you know, if we had a flat Earth, we wouldn't have got to Mars. And some people will be surprised to hear me say that, but humans have been to Mars. never mind the moon. And if the Earth was flat, we wouldn't have managed that. So, no, that's my take on it anyway.
I was almost thinking that it was spherical, but flattened within the spherical, that like it was a hologram of some sort because we're in a matrix. I don't know.
Imagine a line. Just take a piece of paper, get a thick marker pen, and draw one line through it, and then draw a dome in the middle of it, and another dome down the other side. So a bit like an egg, but imagine, and you know, when you're frying an egg, but imagine it on both sides. So a bit like a flying saucer. So you have the thin line and the bulge in the middle. That's where all the information, the activity is stored. Deep stuff. Hard stuff for people to come to terms with. It doesn't mean that our lives are pointless. It doesn't mean that it's the film of the Matrix. But the brothers that made the Matrix film certainly knew more than most people in Hollywood. And that's why they created that film, as a warning and a shake-up call to ordinary people. And it did. The effect that film's had, not at the time, but 10, 15 years later, the effect on that film, as people then reflect back on it, has done a great service to waking people up, and they've done a wonderful job.
Yeah, that was an incredible movie. Series, what? I should say. You mentioned going from universe to universe, and you know, you're familiar with the Platonic solids. I'm wondering, in order to move from one universe to the other, what is required? I mean, is there like a massive amount of time for evolutionary purposes? And is it something where it would change from one shape to the other as the evolution takes place?
Interesting.
That's my question.
Really interesting. It depends whether you travel. If we're talking about, because there's time travel here, if we're talking about an evolving race, as the human race is, then you arrive at your next destination in the same bodies that you left with.
Okay.
But you are given all the blueprints for the start of your new journey to change and evolve into. So in other words, if you move to your next phase in 100,000 years, you may not look like that you arrived on the doorstep, because you are having to change and adapt to your new environment. But there are possibilities of doing stuff through time travel, which means that you experience these different realms without having to go through hundreds of thousands or millions of years of evolution. But you are there only as a holidaymaker, as a tourist, as a visitor, and then you come back again. So you can't ever actively engage with your new environment, because it is not built for you, unless you originally come from there. But you could experience that world, or that group of worlds, but you would never be a child of that realm, because you've never made it through. When humanity makes it to the next stage, it will be a child of the next stage, and then through its life it will grow up to adolescence, and then grow up to maturity, and then as it begins to get old, it's ready for the next stage. So you see it as a growing process organically, as well as spiritually and energetically. But there are many ways to experience it. For instance, a guy who I've never met, and I wish I could, a guy called Charles Hall, seems a lovely American guy, who talks about the tall whites. He's refers to tall whites, and tall whites are true ETs. And for many people who are not understanding this, and they thought everyone's an ET who's an alien, no, that's not the case. If you're an ET, you're an extraterrestrial, which doesn't mean you're an alien, full stop. It means that you're an alien who came here in real time. In other words, an ET, in the true sense of the word, is a male or female alien that gets on a spaceship off their planet and travels here, and it takes them 20 years, 25 years, 30 years to get here, and they arrive here. That is an ET. Somebody who gets off their planet, goes into a portal, and arrives here 3 seconds later is an extra-dimensional entity. So Charles Hall talks about ETs, and actually it takes them about between 19 and 21 years from their star system to the planet Earth. So they are experiencing a change in reality, but in real time. And they can exist here in 3D with certain alterations and changes to their body. So there are many ways that an advanced, technologically advanced creature can experience other dimensions or other worlds, but only a indigenous living creature that has evolved through his or her own hard work has the right to exist in a new world continuously. Okay. Wow.
Now that I have never heard that before. Thank you.
Pleasure.
This is something related to another gentleman that I had interviewed, Tori Smith, and he had stated that he actually saw Bush and Cheney taken off world. Mm-hmm. And she is asking if you feel that this is true. And it says here, as far as Ray Kosulandich.
That's a name I don't know.
Me neither. And his ET contacts are concerned Earth is being hauled away out of our solar system towards Orion. Does he have any knowledge of this? I'm going to stop there because I don't want to keep going.
Thank you. Two questions. We'll deal with the first one. Simply yes, which is quite right. Dick Cheney is was particularly ahead of the corporations. Dick Cheney actually was head of a corporation army. There was a special army which was paid for and trained and run by the corporations. And there was a Mars task force, which the regular army of America wasn't permitted to be involved in. How could they be? But the corporations provided and funded that. And hence, earlier I said that people have been to Mars. The travel of Bush and Cheney is actually quite rare. It was much more common for them to be visited by off-world entities. That was much more common. For them to travel off was maybe four times a year, maybe twice a year, not a lot, but to be visited on a regular basis. Okay. The second question, there is a bit of truth in that. I'm not going to laugh at the second part of the question. One of the negative forces comes from Orion, and I don't see it as a physical taking of the Earth towards Orion, but I see it as trying to move the Earth's humanity energetically towards Orion. Mm. In other words, I want you to imagine a piece of paper, and I got two colors, let's just have it as green and red, and I paint half of my paper with green and half with my red paint, and there's a line down the middle, and I put a little counter on the middle, and you know, if you ever played this game as a kid, and you get two straws, and an opponent sits at one side, or he and she blows through the straw trying to push the counter into the blue side, mm-hmm. and you're blowing on the other straw trying to push the counter on the other side. That's what's happening on an energy basis, because if humanity's energy can swing towards the denseness of Orion, then it will be easier for people to manipulate or mind control humanity generally. So it's not a physical pulling towards Orion, but it is a spiritual, energetic pulling towards Orion, which we must resist.
You know, that brings me to another question. I mean, what is your take on, we've talked about how the Earth is the worst, it's the prison planet of all prison planets, you know, but what is your perspective of those that are living on Mars and places like Orion, where I've read some really terrible stuff going on there? I mean, I interviewed one man that said, there's prison planets all over the universe. We're not mm-hmm. the only one, and that this is the virus itself is actually the darkness that has completely taken over all of these planets, and mm-hmm. that is, in my opinion, what started the Guardian Alliance, according to them, millions of years ago. This has been an ongoing war. I'm just curious what you think about that.
Okay. I see the Earth as a prison planet from the energy perspective. It's a prison planet in the sense that it has a energy net around it, which prevents souls from escaping and getting away. On Mars and places like Orion, there are physical prisons in the sense that you are in a caste system. This is your job. This is your grade. This is what you're entitled to do. This is what you can think. These are your rights, or not, as the case may be. This is what you're entitled to. So that's a physical prison, even though there may not be bars. Now, we don't have that in the open way. That's a very subtle way on this planet. But the prison system that I'm talking about here operates as an energy field undercover, so the public don't know. On those other places, it's in, everybody knows it. That's why they're there, and they can't physically get off, because they are in small communities bottled up. There was a second part to the question, and I've forgotten what that was because the phone started ringing.
I was just wondering if the spreading of the darkness has in fact been stymied, and we are making, you know, headway to bring the quotient, the light dark quotient, to I don't know, is it supposed to be completely in balance, or are we supposed to just completely get rid of the dark throughout the universe? You know, I think that's something we all wonder about, you know.
Right. No. This is the problem that I have with some very odd New Age thinking. You know, we've talked about this before, and I'll do it again, that there are some people who passionately believe that, you know, Archangel Michael, pure white light, sweetness and love, that's all there is. And if you stay in that, you're going to be fine. But what they don't seem to recognize is that Source, or God, created the balance, the other side. So if you just stay in your quota, how in goodness knows name can you say you've experienced all that there is to experience on life? So the very brave people are those that go into what we would call the dark side, and they go in and say, I'm going to experience it. I'm not going to go in fear, and I'm going to go and I'm going to experience that. And basically, you're here. This is you. And you live with Archangel Michael, etc., etc. And then here's the dark side. And unless you come across and experience that, how on earth can you ever hope to heal by bringing both energies together, and by healing yourself, healing the greater galaxy? So the dark energy that people refer to will always have a place in every universe of every multiverse, because it is part of the balance. But when human consciousness says that we can bring both halves or both sides together into unison, there is no good or bad, black or white, positive or negative. There is only going to be male and female, actually, until you get right to the very top, and then even that doesn't exist. But
yeah,
let's not worry about that now. But by bringing these what look like different, totally different and antagonistic energies together and healing it, that is love, that is beauty, that is oneness. And without that, you can't ascend, as they would say. So no, it's not about driving it away. It's about transmuting it. It's about converting it into a new energy of a new beginning for a new human race. That's what we should be aiming for.
Lovely. God, that should be a quotation on my, I love that. Love the way you said that. Well, now you were talking about the fifth dimension. Talk a little bit about how do they exchange services with one another? Because everybody's gotten so hung up about money.
Yep.
And so hung up about gold. And, oh God, we don't want that. We need to be completely, you know, I'd like to hear what you think about that.
Okay. In a sad way, the very strong purists some 20 years ago, who passionately believed in a moneyless society, produced some very simple charts, and it's always about men. It was 20 years ago. So the fisherman gives the baker a fish, and the baker gives the fisherman a loaf of bread. So they've made a great exchange there. What about the 90-year-old woman? What does she do? What about the disabled child? What about the 3-week-old baby? What do they do? So you know, we have to be serious about this, and I can tell you what the answer is, but I can also tell you that the human race is not ready for it. And here we go. You know, I love cats, so we'll start off with a cat.
Yeah.
My cat's not very well, so I take it to the vet. And the vet looks at it and gives me some medicine for it. But I don't pay the vet. I just walk out of the shop. That evening, the vet goes to get her dinner. And she goes to the supermarket, and she fills her basket, and she goes to the woman at the end, and the woman helps her put the food into the bag. But she doesn't pay the woman for that. The woman in the shop, okay, that's her job, to help do that. There may be another woman who, her job is to look after old people. She's a carer. And she goes to the shop, and she gets her food, and she doesn't pay for it either, because her job is to look after people. Mm-hmm. That actually works because we don't need money. Why do we not need money? Because we're not going to have any stocks and shares. We're not going to have any bonds. We're not going to have any corporations. So, you know, you dig the coal for a power station to make that power station work, but you don't get paid for it. But you get your food and a roof over your head, and you don't pay for your heating or anything else. Now, why doesn't it work? It won't work at the moment because I'm afraid I'm going to signal out somebody now. Because the farmer says, well, I grow all the corn that makes all this bread. I'm a very important person. And I think I'm entitled to two flat screen televisions, not just the ordinary one that we get. And I'm entitled to two foreign holidays a year. And I want some of those pretty stones that you call diamonds, because, you know, without me, you wouldn't work it. And then there might be somebody who's a very important person in the hospital, and he says, yes, but I make people well. I'm very important. If it wasn't for me, people would die. Therefore, I think I'm more important than the man that collects the trash. So I want more than what you give the man that collects the trash. So this is the problem. It's egos and it's value-based system. That's why at the moment it won't work, because humans are too controlled into what they think is valuable. When all people are equal, we've talked about this with the term of masters, when all people are equal and they're not hung up about what they do. In other words, when the guy that empties the trash is valued in the same way that somebody who works in a bank or wherever it might be, we're going to have money in our new society, but I use that because I don't like bank managers. When that happens, we don't need money. And here's the control element. This is how so difficult it is to get this concept over to people. I did speak to somebody who I know very well, who isn't awake, and she looked at me and said, yeah, but how will you pay people to fly bananas over from other countries or oranges? I just didn't get the concept of it. So it can work, but it can only work when human consciousness has advanced and we're not all into stocks and shares and bonds and markets. You know, so yes, it can happen, but not yet.
Well, and also thinking in terms of union and we versus me. So.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, she asked about Nibiru. She also, there was an interview that I had, and there's a gentleman that he is personally attacked on an ongoing basis because of where he lives. He lives in a portal of like eight dimensions, and he sees men in black. He sees death ray guns. He sees, you know, heads of state coming in and out of there. I mean, he says it is just like a revolving door. There's thousands. And he has had Obama come in there, and he has been repetitively raped and sodomized. Okay. He also has come clean that the same thing has happened to him with Cobra. And so she brought this up and said, is it true, according to Tori Smith, that both of these people have done what Tori claims they did, which is, he says that they have raped children, they have participated in the satanic ritual stuff, they have participated in sodomization of, you know, people. This is kind of an uncomfortable question. I was wondering if I should even ask, but I'm going to anyway.
Well, you know me, I don't shrink from anything.
Okay.
I appreciate that you're reading a question. I just want to be clear in my own mind. You used the word Cobra, who I've never met, but have seen one or two radio clips or what have you. I didn't understand what the relationship, when this person used the name Cobra, what was the relationship there in terms of what?
Torrey Smith was also, he claims very loudly that he was raped also by him.
And by Cobra?
Yes.
Okay. I obviously can't comment on that directly because, right. Not because I'm frightened of a lawsuit, but because I haven't seen it.
Yes.
And I don't know. And I've always, all my time, the last 4 or 5 years I've gone public, I've always said I can only speak about what I've seen or what I've been told and I fully accept as being truth. What I can say to you is that because somebody looks like somebody doesn't mean it's them. It is very, very easy with the technology that the elites have to make a person think they are being attacked by somebody when in actual fact they're not. So that we need to hold on to that. If we think of Operation Bluebeam, right back to the day of the Bay of Pigs, mm-hmm. when the Americans actually set the destroyer with a holographic device on board already towards Cuba, and it was already on its way before it was called back by Kennedy. And that was right back in the early 60s. And the object there, for anybody who's not aware of Bluebeam, was to project a picture of the Virgin Mary above Havana, above the city, and to project a voice which extolled the Catholic, because it's a very strong Catholic country, Cuba, to extol the Catholics to rise up against Fidel Castro. So they were so confident that they had the technology back in the early pushing mid-60s that they could convince enough people that the Virgin Mary had spoken to them. So that was back then. So I can tell you what, the technology has advanced 50-fold since then. So just because somebody comes to you doesn't mean that's really who they are. I'm not going to go on to the rights and wrongs of anything. I will say that my webmaster, and I use the word master deliberately as a joke because she is a woman. And I use it, it's an in-joke, because this is the way that society thinks.
Yeah.
So my webmaster, who is a woman, actually went to the conference recently that Cobra had in England, in South England, and she witnessed the most amazing verbal attack that took place publicly. It nearly fell apart, and it is alleged, because I don't know, it's alleged that the organizers run off with the money. So I don't know, but what I do know is that good people get attacked and bad people get attacked.
Right. And you really just have to go into your heart, don't you?
You have to ask yourself.
That's what I always say to everybody.
Who you believe and what you want to believe. And if you think it's true, you go with it. If you don't, you don't. And that's all I'm going to say on that subject.
Thank you. And as usual, you handled that ever so diplomatically.
Thank you. Well, that's what the mantid in me does.
Yes, I know. It's beautiful. She has one last question, which is, do you agree that we still need gold, silver, and food stored at the time of the event for the adjustment period?
No, I don't. I don't think you need gold and silver stored. I think you need food and water. You can't eat gold and you can't drink silver. I know what she means, and I'm not being flippant. It's a damn good question. Right. No to gold and no to silver. Well, no to gold, simply because if none of your listeners will remember, and neither do I, but in the Great Depression, what happened was that gold was devalued. And then Americans were told by law they had to go and sell their gold to the bank because the American bank needed gold because they were going down the toilet, basically, use an English expression here. When they'd done that, what did the system do? It hiked up the price of gold. So you sold your gold necklace or your gold coin for $100 And the next day, that same item was worth $200. So people were cheated. What's the point in hoarding gold? Because you can't eat it, and the bank will only steal it off you if we still have a banking system in the same vein. Now, you're much better to have bottled water, tinned food, gas canisters and a means to cook. If you've got pets, get yourself some tinned dog or cat food. If you have a plot of land, start growing some vegetables. That's much more valuable, much more important to you. And I've never been about fear. I've never been about being scared. But it's no harm in having 4 weeks or 6 weeks at tops backup supplies. And if you don't need them, well, they're all tinned. They're not going to go off. So it's not a waste of money. But I think that we might have shortages of basic resources. No one's going to starve. We're not going to end up with nothing, but there may be shortages. So wouldn't it be good if you've got a few tins of beans and some bottled water, that, you know, you don't have to go and fight your way through the food lines, because you can do that. So and anybody who's really rich, get yourself a big tank in your garden or your land or your property and start filling it up with diesel or gas, so that when we have problems, you can just fill your car up from your own reserve. So, you know, be clever, get yourself a generator if you're in the country, and just try and think of what we have in England called Boy Scouts. I don't know whether you have them in America, but
yes.
Okay, think about that sort of attitude. And to use a Knights Templar terminology, be prepared. Prep up, be ready for it.
Okay, now that's kind of bringing thoughts to my mind of, you've mentioned that you think it's a lot closer.
Yep.
It's not as far away. So is this something I know you're not going to give dates, nor am I going to ask you. I would never ask you that.
Well, I don't have a problem. Sorry to interrupt you, but I know what's coming. Many people have given dates, and then they give them uncovered, and when their date doesn't happen, everybody says, well, you got it wrong. And they're right, because, you know, they've been held to account. And last year, I predicted a financial crash in Europe. And I've actually proved right, because if anybody goes and does the Googling, go do your research, you'll see that the International Monetary Fund, which is the organization run by the United States of America, but is an international bank for the world, put 50 billion, that's a lot of money, 50 billion euros, that's more than $50 billion actually, 50 billion euros into the European bank in February. They did it again in March.
Wow.
Did it in April. Now, this isn't real money, this is just zeros on a computer screen.
Right.
But they did it early enough. They did it in February, and it prevented a panic. So nobody can say to me, oh, Simon, you said there'd be a financial crash in Europe, you're wrong. Because I say, yeah, just go look and you'll see why there was no financial crash, because 50 billion was put in February. Now, America's a different cake. The smart money, let's talk money because we're still in the money world. The smart money was on a situation occurring this fall. September, October, November. But I'd had word 4 weeks ago that it could be sooner. It could be in July. Mm-hmm. Now, what we're talking about is a situation in the United States of America where its foreign trading competitors no longer honor the dollar. So in other words, if you are buying a internal homegrown product, it's just going to cost you the same as it did last Tuesday, no change. But if you're going to buy something that's been made abroad, it may skyrocket in price. So we're talking about what they term a reset. And this is a terminology, because they don't want the real word, which is devaluation. They don't want the word devalue because it puts people into panic. I don't want panic, but I want truth. So I don't use the word reset. I use the word devaluation. Look, if you have a country that doesn't have any gold, and the United States of America has precious little gold now, and you have a country that does, why would you trade equally with that country? If gold is the standard, and you know I don't like the idea, but if gold is the standard, and you know your listeners are very learned, they're very spiritual, but some people who are listening to your radio show may be new to you or new to your show, and they may be just on the beginnings of waking up. So talks of aliens and flying saucers is probably a bit too much for them, but what I'm about to say isn't, and they can go and research this, Google it again. I think it was about between five and seven years ago when America defaulted on an interest payment to China. And the Chinese basically said, look, we don't want your dollars, they're useless. This is 7 years ago, and we don't want them, but we want gold. So pay us in gold, and we'll be quite happy for that. And just that in itself must be a shock for good, strong, honest, decent Americans having to learn that their country is having to pay gold to China. Mm-hmm. That in itself is a shock. Anyway, they said yes, they will do. And anybody who's been inside Fort Knox or seen any videos of Fort Knox knows that all gold is moved about by forklift truck, the same as your country is mine. Yes. And each bar is numbered, but they do it by weight. That's how they do it. So anyway, this was duly sent on a ship or an airplane. I can't remember. I don't know which, but it was sent. And the Americans honestly, genuinely thought the Chinese would just load it, weigh it, lock it away. They didn't. And there's a reason why Chinese people are called inscrutable. And what they did was they drilled into a number of these so-called gold bars
and found
they were, no, they weren't. They were made of tungsten. Tungsten has a very similar weight. Mm-hmm. But they were 24 karat gold plated, which meant that this was a deliberate trick. Could have started World War III. It didn't. So this time the Chinese said, we've discovered what you've done to us. We're not very happy. You obviously don't have any gold. You don't have any notes. What do you have that we want? Boston Harbor. So if you're listeners go and Google Boston Harbor, you'll actually find, if you dig hard enough, that Boston Harbor is owned by China. And many places say, oh, we've sold this bit of real estate to China. No, they didn't. They gave it away because they owed millions in interest payments, which they couldn't afford. So every ship that unloads or loads at Boston Harbor pays a levy and a tax, and that goes to China. So China owes Boston Harbor, as it does many other bits of real estate. So we know that five, six, seven years ago, America had no gold. So this is why the people in the know are aware that this crash is inevitable.
Right, right. Okay. Question. Have they not purchased a whole bunch of harbors?
They haven't purchased them. They've been given them.
Well, okay. Taken them, given them.
Boston Harbor was the first one, which was the first one they asked for after the falling through of the interest payment.
Because the scuttlebutt in Southern California is that there is a huge area that we receive all incoming products, exports, out of Long Beach. Are you familiar with Long Beach, California? And it's just gigantic.
I've never been there, but I've seen it on the map, and it looks very lovely.
Well, it's gigantic. It's amazing. I used to work down there. And the story goes that they actually purchased that back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You agree with that?
No, they didn't purchase it. They were given it. They purchased it at a very knockdown price.
On the books.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Right? Wow.
You have to understand that America's... Look, when America went off the gold standard, the Rothschilds were asked, Mr. Rothschild was asked to value America. How much is our country worth, please? And he valued it. I don't know what that value was. He valued it, and anybody with any brain would say, okay, right, we better not print any money over the value of our country, because that's the value of our country, and therefore the value of our dollar is good. Well, as of January this year, the United States of America was 22 times printed over that value. But the value is updated every year. So it's a rolling value. So America is 22 times over its ability to pay. Now, anybody in power knows that. So that's why it's a great big joke, and everyone's waiting for America just to fall off the edge of the cliff. Now, why it's serious, and I use this because it's everybody wears shoes in the Western world, nearly, is that 80% of the world's shoes are made in China. So if China says to America, we don't want your dollars, where are you going to buy your 20% of shoes from? Probably South America or Italy or somewhere. So America needs imports, and it needs them very badly. In my own country, 45% of our gas, and I'm using the American term of gas, meaning what I put in a motor car, not the British term, 40% of gas comes from abroad. So if we had the same situation, we'll have rationing in Britain. There will be, you know, probably 2 gallons per person per day or something, I don't know. But there would have to be some sort of rationing. So you've got China, India, Switzerland, Brazil, Russia, all creating a gold-backed currency. And then you have everybody else, bar a few countries, with no gold. So where would you rather buy your products, or where would you rather sell them to? This is the problem we've got. So it worked as long as America had the petrodollar. But that is changing. Mm-hmm. And so the security of the United States of America, which was always fixed on the petrodollar, is fast going. So that's why this July could see a difficult situation in the United States. However, they did save the day in Europe, and they possibly could save it in America. So I say to people, watch the price of gold every day, see how it changes. That is your biggest indication of what is going on, because the day before 9/11, then the stocks of United Airlines just went crazy. So people in power know when something's going to happen, between 12 and 36 hours before it does. So watch the price of gold. If gold suddenly skyrockets, then you can be sure that somebody knows something's going to happen.
Good tip. Thank you for that. What is your feeling about, you know, this is something that goes on all over the place here in the United States, which is people are literally paranoid about the amount of purchasing that's going down by the Chinese government of not only of our real estate, which has been going on for decades, right? Mm-hmm. But also the fact that I think the last report said, what was it, 85% of the gold is owned by the Chinese?
Mm.
Something really high. So what is your feeling about, like, in my opinion, they could have really watched us die a long time ago. They've had the economical means to really bring us to our knees. Mm-hmm. What do you think their agenda is with the U.S.?
No, it's not quite the case. They didn't want that because China wasn't in a position to exert itself. You think that, what are we now, 2015, 25 years ago, America was supplying military hardware to the Chinese, as were the Russians. So the Chinese were not economically or technologically in a position to want to see America down on its knees. They needed America. But they always had the game that once they were strong enough, they would then throw off the shackles of the Western world as they saw it. So they never wanted the destruction of America until they were in a position to benefit from it. And they still don't want the destruction of America because they want America as a trading partner. They see America as a massive market. Look at all the goods that come out of China. I know a member of the Illuminati said to me a couple of years back, China is the father of everything. In other words, it is the creation of most electronic goods.
Yes,
the chips may come out of California, but what armature, what hardware are those chips going into?
Mm-hmm.
So we have a situation where China doesn't want the destruction of America, but wants the weakening of America so that it then can extort a fair price as it sees. In other words, if you are a manufacturer and you are wanting to buy, let's say, flashlights, okay, and you want to buy flashlights, you're a company, you've got a shop, you can't buy 50 flashlights from China. You can't buy 100 flashlights or 1,000 flashlights. You have to buy it by the container load. That's how powerful China is. So what companies are doing now is they are clubbing together in America and Britain and Europe, and they're sharing containers. So I might have 1,000 flashlights, you might have 1,000 chairs, etc., etc. China is so powerful that it says to other companies, no, we're not going to sell you those. You're going to buy it by the container load. So we are seeing a change. China doesn't want world dominance politically or militarily. It wants economic dominance. And it is going to maneuver itself into such a position that it has the gold, but it has the political backing of Russia, because that's what China doesn't have. But China doesn't have the political power itself, but Russia does. So if you put a lot of gold with political backing, then you have a very powerful set. And that's what they're doing.
Very powerful marriage there. Now, what is your opinion of BRICS? There's an awful lot of propaganda as well as some really good articles about BRICS. And the light worker community tends to see it as a very positive movement towards a little bit more of a humanitarian financial system. But then I hear from some financial contacts I have that it's just one of three systems that have been deliberately created to make sure that they still maintain the power over the financial sector. So I was wondering what you thought.
They're all right. All of those points are correct. Because if you're still using money, it's because you want to have power. This is what we talked about earlier. True. So when Russia and China created this BRICS system, they did it to take dominance of the world economically. That's why they didn't do it, because they felt they wanted to be happy and celebrate someone's birthday. They did it because they wanted to take control of the world economically. They did it because they felt that they were no longer prepared to be pushed around by America. So they were forced into it. And from what I've learned over the last 3 weeks, I can absolutely understand why President Putin has done what he's done. Because the America and Britain have acted disgracefully towards him. And this isn't in the public domain at all, but I'm amazed at how restrained Putin has been. So BRICS was always created as a system to have a financial monetary system, gold-backed, to counter the American dollar. Now, China wants to do it because they want to make money. Russia wants to do it because it doesn't want to be pushed around by America any longer. So yes, it was created to make a profit and to dominate, which is a negative thing, but it is a positive thing, because what it will do is it will force people in the Western world to reevaluate what their life is about.
Right on. And do you feel that there is, like, from a galactic perspective, is there a hidden hand in providing the momentum behind the BRICS alliance?
Yeah, yes, I know what your question is. Okay. I just want to be clear for your audience, because I know you know. The BRICS idea wasn't an off-world idea, because you don't need to have an off-world mindset to understand what makes this planet tick. But off-world intervention was strong enough to give people like President Putin the cover they needed to basically say to America, do you know what, we're not going to play your game any longer, what are you going to do about it? And that's why America has done some very underhanded things to Russia. But America is scared, and I'm going to use that word again, America is scared, and that's why it hasn't pushed openly, because it is dealing with an off-world force who have basically thrown their hand in with President Putin, because they don't like who's running the White House. End of story.
Interesting. Yeah.
I mean,
and at the same time, when's the last time they were in a position like this where they really don't have a power play?
What, Russia?
United States.
It is interesting, isn't it? The 1970s and 80s saw a very big change. And when the Berlin Wall came down, I think America thought that it had got the whole game sewn up. And indeed it had. And Gorbachev was president, and then Yeltsin became president. and America really dominated the whole game. But what they didn't realize was that a democracy of sorts, and we have to choose our words carefully here, but a democracy of sorts brought through a nationalist leader in President Putin who fought and argued for the good of Russian people. And the people of the West in politics don't understand the psyche of the Russian mindset. Russians are incredibly tough, hard people, and they can get by on very little. And they're very honest, generally, very honest and good-natured people. And when Putin started talking about what America was doing, the Russians actually backed him. Now, I've spoken to more Russian people than I think many people in the diplomatic corps have ever spoken. And you know what? Most Russian people actually are quite intelligent and accept that Putin is doing the right thing. So Putin has the backing. And that's why, you know, it would be very much in someone's interest to try and assassinate Putin. And indeed, that is something that's been seriously looked at.
And you mentioned that in the part one, that there was an assassination attempt on the part of Putin and Obama. Have you had any other intel in regards to that?
No, it's one of the most, as you can imagine, it's one of the most, people were just terrified of talking about it, and you just wouldn't openly talk about this if you were paid by a government and your pensions might be at threat and your family might be at threat. But the situation is so grave from the cabal point of view, the status quo. Putin represents the ending of their happy days.
Yeah, and their empire.
Yeah, they're you know, they've lied and cheated and made absolutely trillions of dollars and had a wonderful life. And suddenly, here's this person in another country challenging them, the great America, how can you do this? And he won't be drawn. He doesn't fall into the traps. They kept set trap after trap after trap, and he doesn't fall into it. And so we have a situation where now they're doing some very, very, very grave things. And give Obama some credit here. This is not often heard. Obama's done some pretty awful things, and I'm not defending the man, but Obama shrinked away from a Third World War, just as the generals around the Israeli government shrinked away from a war with Iran that could have caused a Third World War. But Obama wasn't interested in creating a Third World War. And therefore, just like JFK, it was time to get rid of him. But unlike JFK, this man, Obama, knows the world, knows the history, and knows how evil and duplicitous, there's a big word, many people can be. And so he protected himself in a way that dear, beloved John F. Kennedy never thought was necessary. I mean, for God's sake, you know, riding in a open-top limousine in Dallas.
I've always wondered that too.
Yeah, exactly. So what I'm saying is that the presidents these days are a little bit more clever, a little bit more aware. And so I'm glad that nobody got killed. I don't want anyone to die. You know, what's the point of it? It's just pointless, because all you have is children who cry, loved ones who are bereft, and nothing is worth that. So they need to sort their problems out professionally around the table. But of course, if you have got an empire, and you use the word empire, and you're quite right, and you think the empire is going to crash, well, you'll fight and do anything if you're that sort of person. So that's what we're faced with on planet Earth at the moment.
Well, it's obvious to me that there's been quite a bit of divine intervention to prevent the generals from not jumping in with Netanyahu. What do you feel is the current circumstance there? I mean, do you feel that everybody's eyes are on him in Israel? I would venture to say that the majority of us that are in the alternative news media, we take a look at Netanyahu and say he is equivalent to the devil himself. And most people would say, you know, what is it going to take to stop this this guy and all of the forces behind him. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, you've actually answered your own question, that he was stopped when his chief of staff, the chief of the Air Force, and one other senior officer refused point blank. It's the first time in history that a democratically elected government has been told no by its senior officers, actually, like that, that I'm aware of, simply because they just knew that it would cause a third world war. And this happened to Obama. Was it 2 or 3 years ago now, when lots of generals seemed to just resign and were got rid of?
Oh yeah,
because 22. They didn't. Right, because they didn't like what they were seeing, and they were not going to do it. And I have said on other shows that at least on 3 occasions in the last 7 years, there have been 3 attempts to detonate a nuclear weapon, and to say the Russians did it, and to cause a nuclear war. Now there was I'm going to remember this. The Minsk was a submarine. Russian submarine, I think it was called the Minsk, that went down, and there was a big race on between the Americans and the Russians to recover the submarine. The Americans got there first, because the Americans had a submarine, a remote control submarine that could go to that depth. The Russians didn't, but anyway, they got the submarine back minus 3 nuclear warheads. And those nuclear warheads were attempted, 2 of them anyway, were attempted to detonate. And they could quite have said, quite legitimately, in the law of the universe, they were Russian.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying we detonated them, but saying, oh, they're Russian. And their media would then immediately say, ah, they were fired by Russia. So that was prevented. And time again, external agencies have intervened at the last minute to prevent one. Now, there was one... I can't remember the date of it. Could have been the 60s, 50s or 60s, where an American bomber was on training road with a live nuclear bomb. And it just accidentally, on purpose, fell out of the aeroplane and crashed into Texas. It was not far from Texas. And when the recovery teams got to it, I think this bomb had 6 fail-safe devices. And 5 of them had been disabled, and the only thing that stopped it from exploding was 1 final fail-safe device. And we find this time and time again, that these evil things are done, and just at the last minute, I mean, that's all verifiable. People can go on YouTube and they can find that. Oh. But it didn't become public until many years after the event. But what I know for a fact from an insider was that there was 1 fail-safe device that couldn't be overcome, and it prevented the bomb from going off. So this is not new. What we're reading is not new. The difference is that human consciousness has risen up, and it's harder for the cabal to hide things from us. We are seeing the truth now, whereas before we didn't. And we are much more aware, and that's good.
Yeah, I agree. Now, you might be familiar with Mike Harris. It says here, Mike Harris of VT and one for myself. It says, where did 25% of the global wealth go when it went off world? Apparently, Mike interviewed Simon a while ago, and referring to notes I took during the interview, Simon said that 1/4 of the wealth from 5 to 6 families had gone off planet in the form of gold. The question is, exactly where the heck did it go?
Well, people will be disappointed or to learn that it didn't actually go to the families. Not all of it. They didn't actually squirrel it, as we say in England, squirrel it away for a rainy day. They've been doing that themselves. These were payments. This was to their lords and masters. So to maintain their position on the planet Earth, they have to make regular payments to an off-world entity. And that off-world entity, just like China, only wants gold. So portions of the money have been squirreled away for themselves, but most of this was down payments towards the deal. In other words, let's take a traditional story where the devil turns up and the devil says, I can make you rich and famous, but you've got to sell me your soul. But in this case, the devil turned up and said, I can make you rich and famous, but I want so many pounds of gold, and I'll put you in a position of power where you can do that. you know, you legitimately, legally, you can do this. You'll be head of corporations, head of companies, and you can extort gold and send it to me. And here's my address where I want it. And that's the situation. That's why America's got no gold. That's why it's got no gold. Because it's been given away.
Payments to this off world.
It's been given away. I mean, you know, think about the American Civil War. Think about the gold that was going about, and, you know, Confederate wagon trains were being attacked, and there was plenty of gold about. There was gold. Where's it all gone? And that's your answer. That's why it's so short.
Wow. So, you know, one of the things I think you alluded to was there was a video that just came out with David Wilcock, and he dropped quite a few bombs. One of them was about who the true identity is behind the Vatican. And he calls them the progenitors. Have you had a chance to hear that?
No, I haven't actually. I've missed that. I've been somewhat taken up with the lack of computers, my end.
I know about that. Three's a charm, huh?
Yeah.
He comments about the progenitors. Have you ever heard of that species? He says that they can be up to 60, 70, 80 feet tall, and that they were the renegades of the universe. They've been tracked. They've been attacked. They've been... Their original planet was blown up, and I believe they ended up landing in Saturn. And he talks about a very interesting part of that. So, and of course they're talking about how Saturn has already been blown up. Now I've heard that from a couple different sources. I'm wondering what you think about that too.
I can't comment on that simply because that's a group that I'm not familiar with, I haven't even had any backstory to that at all. I don't have a problem with something being 60, 70, 80 feet tall. That actually isn't an issue for me. The issue for me is that I'm wondering why they haven't played a bigger part in the human history. Mm-hmm. It may be that they're a gaseous race and not organically based. And it may be that they have no interest in Earth. I've got a lot of time for David Wilcox, actually, primarily because he was one of the first people to talk about global warming in the true sense of the word, that the planets were warming up from the inside. But also, I did see an interview with him where he broke down and burst into tears because he'd been threatened, his life had been threatened, and he did cry, and I always thought to myself, you know what, when you put yourself on the stage,
cried with him,
you should expect this, because this is going to happen and you can't show weakness. Now the problem for me with him is that he showed weakness, which means the elite know that he can be threatened and he can be intimidated, and I'm not saying anything bad about the man, but when you break down a live interview crying because you're going to be threatened, then every bad guy, a part of a cabal, will say, right, well, we can manipulate this man because he's frightened.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you are carrying really important information for the world, you cannot afford to be frightened. You cannot afford to do it.
Can't go into the fear phase.
You can't, because, you know, you are going to set yourself up as an example. And if I was a whistleblower, I wouldn't go to, I'm not being rude, I wouldn't go to him, because he broke down on national, wherever it was, the big interview, crying. I would be scared as a whistleblower to go to him, because I would be frightened that he would then, under duress, say who'd been to visit him. And that's why whenever people see me, whether it's publicly or privately, I am always the same. I don't have those emotions that most of these creatures have. I'm devoid of those emotions. And so people who come to me with information know full well that it never gets given away. But you know, I'm not saying that what David is saying is wrong. I just have no knowledge of these creatures. And if he says they're real, I am happy to believe they're real.
Yeah, and he gets his information from Richard Hoagland, apparently, who's one of the main insiders. But again, getting back to what you and I have talked about before, it's like this is such a very murky time to determine who is truly working in the total truth because of the technology and not really knowing, even they themselves who earnestly feel they're bringing forth truth.
Yeah.
It depends on who they got it from and what agency they were with and what their agenda was, you know, and who they're aligned with, even galactically.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that, and also people with the best intentions in the world will see a piece of evidence and interpret it incorrectly or differently. For instance, you mentioned Richard Hoagland. There are photographs of pictures of the moon, NASA pictures, absolutely genuine NASA pictures, which appear to show pieces of crystal or glass off the ground reflecting, and you could consider that to be a glass city or a crystal city or a dome that had covered an area of the moon so that it could have had oxygen placed in it. But then when you look into some of the other aspects, you find that when 2001 was filmed, and I've done a big presentation on this and I'm not going to take up your time with it, but when 2001 was filmed, the absolute unique system of threading glass beads on thin threads and using a back projection screen onto the glass screen allowed the film 2001 to appear to have a very real front and a very, very genuine back. But it was actually a very advanced form of what we call back screen projection before digital blue screen work. Now, instead of interpreting these pictures as a glass dome over the moon, we could actually interpret them as part of a glass screen from which almost holographic pictures have been projected. So I'm not saying one thing or the other, but we must be very careful when we look at evidence, and that we often extrapolate something that matches what we want it to match. And I'm sure I'm guilty of that as much as anybody else. But yep. It's about saying, what are the possibilities here? And sometimes when you ask me something, I'll say, well, there's this or there's that. It's best to be balanced. But at the end of the day, what people are doing, if they're good people, is they are bringing the story out, and it's their truth. And if they may not be right in some areas, good for them for bringing the topic out and getting debate going. What we don't have time for is people who are doing it to manipulate the truth.
Absolutely.
And I don't think either of the two gentlemen you mentioned are in that category. I think they're both very genuine people who are seeking to bring the truth out. You know, we need more people like that.
Yeah, thank you so much. And, you know, I can't even believe time has flown by. We have just a few more minutes, and I still have a gazillion questions, so I'll hit you up in a couple of months. How's that?
That's absolutely fine.
That's okay with you.
The questions that have been asked by you and by your listeners are first class.
Thank you.
You know, and there we go again. You see, we're part of a 3D world, and I'm bringing a class system into it, first class, not second class or third class. But they are questions written by people who clearly have thought long and hard about what's important. And it just shows that the people that you run your, you know, for the show for, because it's the audience that matter, are decent people. And that's why it's a pleasure for me to be interviewed by you, because you are a decent person, and the people that you're representing are decent as well. So I thank you, and I thank your audience, actually, for keeping the faith and staying focused, not panicking, and seeking the truth. And in the end, we will win, in the sense that...
This is Alexandra from Galactic Connection. I'm back. Sorry about that, but Simon Parks lost his internet connection again. This is only what? The third or fourth time that we've tried. No, actually, if you add up all of the takes that we made to make this two-part series, there were literally seven of them. So we've had quite a bit of interference. With that said, I thought that I would end this with bringing on one of Simon Park's team members, and I want everyone to meet Fran. Beautiful, lovely Fran. Hi, Fran.
Hello.
And it's not very often you get to see her blush. So anyway, Fran is really dedicated to the light. She's done a tremendous amount of work for Simon. And so I just want to thank her for all her support. And we got cut off right in the middle of probably one of the most interesting and important statements that Simon was going to say before he got off. So I thought I would ask Fran to finish his statement. And he said he just wanted the audience to know that we will
win and the human race will be triumphant.
Oh, outstanding. So we will win and the human race will be triumphant. So I want everybody to go away with that nice little last tidbit. So anyway, also I'd like Fran to introduce you once again to the website and how to access Simon.
Yes, the website is called simonparks.org. And if you want to come through and book any of the services that are on there, then you'll get me and I can book you in. And it's getting busier and busier, so please be patient if you don't hear straight away.
Excellent. Okay, everyone, you heard it from directly the team member herself. So, everybody, I hope you enjoyed this series of interviews. I really did. We're going to go ahead and schedule another one in a couple of months, probably. And in the meantime, just continue to do all that you do to shine your light. And please continue to support Galactic Connection. We do run our blog 365 days a year. And we also have some incredible services coming up around the corner that I'm very excited about. And my dog wants you to know that as well. So anyway, thank you for all that you do and the support that you provide us. We truly do love you all. And thank you, Fran, for just being willing to jump on at this last minute.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you.
Take care, everyone. Lots of love. Bye.